Sonia, we'll do our prayers. Let's take a moment, as always, to just bring our minds to rest gently, to rest. Perhaps are already at rest, having chanted the 37 practices. Just bringing our awareness into, letting our awareness include our body, the feeling of sitting on our seat, in our space, in our shared cyberspace, in your local space. In this present moment of awareness, just sort of sinking into the flow of experience. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. Dharan sunshan tam chelo trisu drawers in ji lap to soul, chelam to drawers in ji lap to soul, lam tropa sowers in ji lap to soul. I pray for blessing. May my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing. May the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing. May the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing. May confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang lu dang nu jin ke chulbum dada mi ke nam dang drawa kunji drake jit sampar tam che ke du daki che ten. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And now the reminder for arousing bodhicitta. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So now we've set our motivation, accumulated some merit, made some aspirations on behalf of ourselves and all beings, so our practice is empowered. And now we can do our meditation. So we're going to do something a little different today. We're going to do a contemplation / meditation on impermanence, but we're going to take off from the same launching pad of the two wings of awakening that we usually use. So first, we're just going to bring our minds to rest as usual. Back to rest or still at rest. You can follow a few breaths if you need to. Just rest in open awareness or use a sensory perception as your focus. The main point is to sharpen our focus, to engage our mindfulness at the same time that we are relaxing any tension, relaxing any excessive tightness. So we'll begin with the four common preliminaries. I'm going to read them today from English translation of the Nundro, the preliminary practices. First, I must meditate on this precious human existence with its freedoms and resources, difficult to attain, easily destroyed. From now on, I must make it meaningful. Secondly, everything is impermanent, the world and all it contains. And this is going to be our theme again this week, continuing from last week. Everything is impermanent, the world and all it contains. In particular, the life of beings is as fragile as a bubble of water. The time of death is uncertain, and when I die, I will be nothing but a corpse. At that time, only the Dharma can help me. I must practice diligently. Thirdly, at the time of death, I will not be free. My fate will depend upon my previous actions. I must therefore refrain from negative actions, always engage in positive actions, and each day monitor my stream of being. Fourthly, all places, friends, pleasures, possessions, and everything else in a cycle of existence continually torment me through the three types of suffering. They are like the last meal before my execution. I must sever all attachment and diligently accomplish awakening. So now coming back to our more meditative state from our state of contemplation, just focusing again on the breath or open awareness or sensory perception. We now request the blessing of the Lama, our teacher, or the Buddha, Chenrezi, whatever is the most meaningful connection for you, whatever best represents the embodiment of wisdom and compassion, love, compassion, bodhicitta, awakening. And we visualize them in a body of light floating above the crown of our head on a lotus and moon seat. And we just think, with or without words, that we request their blessing to develop the same qualities that we are inspired by in them. And it should be really heartfelt. Hopefully you have a connection that is heartfelt in that way, and you can just really strongly feel how much you want to develop those qualities. You want to be awakened. You want to radiate love and compassion all the time. And you think that you really could have those qualities and that the teacher, the Buddha, is there to help you do it. And so just by asking, just by opening yourself, just by bringing your attention to it, you receive the blessings and empowerment of your own practice. And you can visualize the teacher, the Buddha, whoever your connection is, visualize them in their body of light descending into your heart center. Continuing to radiate light and love, compassion, wisdom, awakening. And they just remain there, and you can access that that awareness anytime. So today we're going to do probably a little bit longer meditation, specifically on impermanence. So first, let's bring to mind, first of all, to just bring in the context a little bit. And we're remaining in our state of meditation, listening to the words, and using them as a basis for contemplation and meditation. The context of the teaching of impermanence in Gampopa's Ornament of Precious Liberation is that it is the antidote to the first of the four obstacles to awakening, the first reason that we're not Buddhas. The first thing that impedes our travel on the path to awakening, and that is being too caught up in our activities of this life. You know, that means our work, our interests, our commitments, our obligations, our hobbies, whatever we're pursuing, whatever goals we're pursuing in this life, whatever, you know, obligations we have to fulfill in this life, just, we can't get rid of them. But sometimes we are so caught up in them that we don't make time, or we feel we can't make time for things that are more meaningful to us in the long term. So bring to mind how your life feels, like your own personal life. How does that feel to you in terms of how caught up you are in activities, how many obligations you may have, how many commitments, how much work, all the things you want to accomplish today, by the end of the year, by the end of your life? Just feeling the texture of it. Does it feel overwhelmingly busy? Not so busy? Maybe leisurely? If it's leisurely, then we just have the second obstacle to worry about, which we'll encounter next week. So just acknowledge, you know, whatever level of activity, busyness, involvement, commitment, to-do list you feel caught up in. But don't start thinking about any of them. You're just letting, like, individual things might come to mind, but you're just, like any other thought, you just let them pass through your awareness. You acknowledge them, let them flow on. Just getting a sense of how our life feels to us right now. And now we'll read the second reminder again. Everything is impermanent. So now, in the context of being aware of how busy we are in our life, how many things we have to keep up with, how much news we have to keep up with, how, you know, our civic duties are, taking care of our kids, needing to go to the gym, all of those things in addition to our work. So now we remember everything is impermanent. The world is impermanent. Even the world is impermanent, but everything contained within the world is also impermanent. It's going to come to an end. In particular, the life of beings is as fragile as a bubble of water, meaning even in the midst of the most important project of our life could suddenly end, or we could get the diagnosis that will shift our priorities forever. The time of death is uncertain. We don't know when it's coming. What do we want to be doing when that end comes? Where do we hope our mind will go? Will it be on our to-do list? Will it revert immediately to Dharma practice? The time of death is uncertain, and when I die, I will be nothing but a corpse. At that time, only the Dharma can help me. So I must practice diligently. So now let's contemplate at what point we think we might finish all these things we have to accomplish. Is there an end point, or is it just endless? Will it take us right up to the moment of our death? And how much of it can we take with us when we die? How many piles of paper, how many lists of things to do? Can we complete that important project when death comes? And then, per the reminder, what is it that really will help us when we die? Is it our membership in an organization? How much work we got done? How many awards we got? And then we can contemplate, still feeling the texture of what our life feels like. How do our priorities, like the way that we live in this life, how are our priorities aligning with what we feel will be important to us when our life comes to an end? And if we feel we need to reorder our priorities, perhaps, then how might we reprioritize? What is the most important thing we need to accomplish today or tomorrow or by the end of the week or by the end of the year or by the time we die? What might we let go of that's lower on the list? Are there things we can let go of that take up time that we might be spending on Dharma practice and other priorities? So feeling this texture of how our life is, how busy we are, how many things we have to do, whether our priorities are the way we want them or not, just feeling the texture of it, not thinking about it, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. We'll go to Tonglen and just breathe that in. Breathing in the texture. And breathing out whatever we need. Breathing out peace of mind. Breathing out being able to rest in open awareness. Breathing out having time to do our Dharma practice and to do the things that are most important to us that will really count when the time of death actually comes. Just alternating those with the breath, breathing in the busyness, breathing out the relaxation, breathing out the time and space for our priorities. Now we can bring to mind, to open up our Tonglen, bring to mind our loved ones, someone who's important to us, someone we care about, and think about how they also are caught up in their lives, in the busyness and activities of their lives, sometimes really being out of their control. And just breathe in theirs as well as ours. Breathing in the busyness, the sense of overwhelm. Breathing out the time to rest and the time to do what they feel and we feel is important. Breathing out clarity of mind about what is important. Breathing out the ability to restructure our lives to accommodate that, to reflect that. And now breathing in also the busyness of the UPS delivery person, all the Amazon delivery persons and warehouse workers that bring us all the things we need and want. Breathing in the busyness, the overwhelm of people who work on Wall Street, people who work in the government, people who work at Walmart. CEOs and people who work three jobs just to support their family. Breathing in their busyness and their lack of leisure too, for their lives to reflect their priorities and their wants and needs. Breathing in that busyness and breathing out leisure, that all their needs are fulfilled, but leaving them the leisure to rest and relax and rest in open awareness, practice the Dharma, whatever form that may take for them. The busyness of all the animals, the birds, the earthworms, the fish, struggling just to get enough food to avoid predators, raise their young. Breathing out to them a precious human existence. And now taking a moment to appreciate that right now in this moment, we who are here have this time right now to study, contemplate, and meditate together. And wish that for all sentient beings, whatever form of Dharma they may be inclined towards. Breathing in their lack of leisure, breathing out that they have the same opportunity that we have right now. And now the final stage of this meditation. This contemplation. Imagine that you're on your deathbed right now. We didn't get hit by a truck. You know, we dodged all of the instantaneous sudden death opportunities that are enumerated in Torch of Certainty. But imagine that we're on our deathbed, having a leisurely death, but the end is coming. The end is right in front of us. And imagine what will be in our mind at that moment. What will we be thinking about? If you have developed the habit of resting in open awareness, of resting in the nature of mind, then imagine that as you go through the death process and into the bardo, that is the experience you take with you. Just in a state of open awareness, you make the transition easily or not so easily into the next phase. Will we be worrying about the work we didn't get done, the projects we didn't finish, who will win the next election? What will our state of mind be at the time that we're dying? That is our choice to make now, while death is potentially still far away. So now we can just let go of all that conceptuality, all the visualization, all the textures, and just come back to resting in open awareness. All senses wide open, no agenda, hearing sounds, seeing what's in front of us if our eyes are open. Feeling tactile sensations, internal sensations, noticing thoughts coming and going. Not focusing on any one thing in particular, but just letting the flow, experiencing the flow of our experience in this present moment. And now, gently and slowly, come back to study and contemplation mode. You can stretch a little, have something to drink. Does anybody have any comments, questions, insights they would like to share before we look at Ornament of Precious Liberation? And I'm going to unmute you.
Lama, yes. During the taking and sending phase of meditation, is it, I've been using the second and first and second immeasurables, starting the second one about may they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, and that would be my in-breath, and then my out-breath would be may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. Is that all right?
That's lovely. Yeah, that's a perfectly fine way to do it. I mean, it's really, it's just a, taking and sending is just a very basic infrastructure, and you can basically put any content into it that you want as long as it's basically aligned with the mind training of breathing in the unpleasant and breathing, you know, the in-breath is the compassion and the out-breath is the love.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's exactly the way that you did it. The first immeasurable is love and the second is compassion.
Okay. And you don't have to have a specific people in mind. I could walk down the street and just send it out to all the residents.
Absolutely. Or you can just think all sentient beings, or, you know, any watching the birds at your bird feeder. Anybody, anytime.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Joanne. And Angela, you had your hand up.
I was sort of contemplating impermanency around things that we have done that we haven't forgiven ourselves for. And I didn't know if you were going to cover that today, because we've all done, I don't know if we've all done, but I personally have done some things that are, I consider pretty horrible. And I think that's where I have the most difficulty with impermanency. So I just
Is thinking that those things will be unresolved, that those things might be unresolved. That's not, yeah, today's more just about the fact of impermanence, so we probably won't be touching on that, but, you know, you're familiar with the four powers that sort of go with the Vajrasattva practice, the Dorje Sempa practice, like what you do when you have done something that you're aware has hurt someone. The first thing you do is acknowledge it. That's the first power. You really acknowledge it. Like, yeah, I really did this. That's very big, because that's very hard to do. The second one is that it sort of breaks down into four or five. The second is that you regret it really strongly. And those are really probably both that fall within the first power. The second power is that you resolve never to do it again. The third is that you remember the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, that, you know, you're supported by the three refuges. And you just remember, like, your motivation is to take the Buddha as an example and follow his path, and that you have the support of all of that behind you. And for that reason, you know, to be in accordance with that, remediation is the fourth power. And so in the texts, remediation isn't about making amendments, but I think it falls within it. Like, if you can fix it, if you can apologize for it, whatever you can do, if that will be constructive, then you do that. If the person has died or there's some other reason that there's nothing you can do, then you remediate by purifying the karma. You could do taking and sending for the person. Like, you just do whatever you can to bring your own mind into a peaceful state with it, because it's not helpful to regret things beyond doing what you can do to fix them and recognizing them as like an inspiration to not do that again, for example. So if there's something we can do to address it with a person that we have wronged, then of course we do that. But we also can do the Vajrasattva practice, our mantra, if you know that one. Any Dharma practice, Chenrezig, you could do Chenrezig, and you could specifically think of the light going out and freeing that person from suffering along with all sentient beings. So I would, you know, if we have those things in our lives, and sometimes they're memories like long, long ago, and we still really regret things from years and years ago, you can do that process with those things, and you can do that process whenever they arise. Like, you know, doing it one time sometimes does not completely ease your mind. But what you want is when you die, you want to die in a peaceful state of mind as much as possible without regrets. And so you can't fix everything that you did. None of us can fix everything that we've done in our life, but we can go through that process of acknowledging, regretting, resolving never to do it again, remembering refuge, and remediating, like even mentally remediating. So does that help?
Yeah, we got into a discussion about that too at our meditation meeting last night about how they thought that one person should be forgiven, and if someone did something extremely bad, then they shouldn't, that they're lesser. And I'm like, I was arguing that they weren't lesser, but then that brought about all the things that I guess I thought was lesser about me. And so I was like, oh,
yeah.
And your heart is today. So I thought I'd touch on. I really appreciate the reminders that you gave me, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, things aren't always resolvable on the relative level, and especially like intellectually. I mean, there's always arguments on both sides. I don't know that we can ever come to a completely peaceful resolution of anything. But anyway, I find that useful, and that's what I advise people to do when they are struggling with that kind of thing in their own life. Like as far as forgiving other people, as Buddhists, we do that. That's when we get to the chapter on when we get to the chapter, and you can read ahead, the chapter on patience in Ornament of Precious Liberation. It's all about that. Like there's three ways that we need to practice patience. One is just not to be disturbed by things, not let things bother us. And the other is not to retaliate. That's the second one. Like don't retaliate if somebody does something bad to you. And this is like a blanket rule. It's like there's no exceptions to this. Don't retaliate. And the third one is not to hold a grudge, not to stay angry with them, even if you get angry in the moment, which is, you know, that's an impairment of the first one. But like they're, you know, not holding a grudge is something we can work with, like internally. Not getting mad in the moment, that's really hard. But you may not be able to avoid not reacting in the moment, at least internally. But then you can work with those emotions, and you work with them on the level of don't act out of it. Don't retaliate verbally or physically, and don't hold on to it. So I think that argues in favor of forgiveness of anything, even if you feel that the person's done something completely unforgivable, completely reprehensible. It doesn't help. It doesn't really hurt them for you to be mad at them, and it hurts you. So it's all about our own peace of mind, which is what we want to be concerned with as we approach death, which could come at any moment. You know, you just want to keep your mind as undisturbed as possible. Okay, yeah, Dave, I'm going to unmute you.
I always try to be reminded of blaming the stick.
Yeah.
That's the example, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's so, the example. Right there in the patience chapter, yeah. So you think, do you want to explain that?
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody's familiar with it.
So just like with the 12 links or with any kind of understanding of karma, even in the immediate sense of a situation where someone does something, you know, that's just not cool, and even if it's you, they're operating under all the influences and they're out of control to a certain extent. And so just like with gravity or force or momentum of someone hitting you with a stick, you can't really, because of the dependent, operations and causalities in impermanence, the stick hitting you, you wouldn't blame because it's under the influence of the momentum and everything and being wielded by somebody. And the person who's hitting you with the stick is under the influence of all the 12 links and the momentum of his karma.
Yeah, and their anger. I mean, you could immediately think the example in Gampopa, at least, is it's their anger that's, they're under the influence
right.
of their anger.
Right, yeah. Anger and so it is bad. With anything. So it is with any of the stuff. Yeah. And also, like looking back, like on stuff that I've done that I really regretted, and I feel like, how could I have done that, you know? And I was under a lot of different influences, but it's just the same as you probably have an easier time forgiving someone else for a bad action now than you do for yourself in the past, but they're the same.
Right.
Anyway, that's it.
We were the stick that was wielded.
Yeah.
At some
you were
point.
The stick.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I really recommend Gampopa's patience chapter. No problem to read ahead. I relied on that in my 3-year retreat. I read that 100 times in my 3-year retreat. It just goes through everything you can think when something ticks you off. That, and it takes, it just lets the air out of it. It takes the air out of it, takes the wind out of it. And that's the first one, is the stick. You know, think that they're like, it's as if they were under the, like being under the influence of anger and doing something to harm someone else is like being under the influence of alcohol or mental illness. So it's like the person is not seeing things clearly and they're not in full control of their actions. So anybody else before we move on to impermanence? All right, so last week we looked at impermanence through Rinko Tulku's book, Path to Buddhahood. I just want to do the brief recap thing of where we are in the book. So Ornament of Precious Liberation is A to Z, Path to Awakening, from where we are all the way up to Buddhahood, how to get there, what all the steps are on the path. And so we finished the introduction, which is why we need to wake up. We have finished the first three prerequisites. There are High Lama Jinzang. There are three prerequisites for traveling the path, which are Buddha nature, we all have it, precious human existence, all of us here have it, and having a teacher, a Dharma master, an authentic Dharma master to guide us, to serve as our guide, our escort, and our navigator to get us to the other side. So we have all of those things. And so now, so those are the first three topics. If you remember Gampopa's outline of the path, it's in six topics. That's in the introduction. And so the first three are the cause, Buddha nature, the support, precious human existence, and the condition, the nurturing condition, which is the Dharma master, the spiritual guide. And then the fourth topic is the next 16 chapters. So each topic, each of the six topics gets one chapter except for number four, which is the instructions of the Dharma master. And so Gampopa here is our Dharma master that we're following. And this is his, he's leading us along the path here. So before he talks about impermanence, he introduces the entire fourth topic by telling us that there are four obstacles to awakening. There's four reasons why, even though we have all of the prerequisites, we are not Buddha yet. We're still struggling in samsara. We're still struggling on the path. And so each of the chapters in this book addresses or remedies, it serves as the antidote to one of those obstacles or impediments. So the first obstacle is the one we just did the lengthy meditation on, which is being overly occupied, being completely caught up in our worldly activities, all the things we have to do to keep ourselves going in this life, plus all the frills, like must read the New York Times, must go to the gym, must, you know, all the things we feel we have to do that's on our to-do list all the time, which can end up leaving us no time for Dharma practice, or leaving, we can leave Dharma practice like way at the end, something that you fit in the last 5 minutes before you go to bed because you didn't get to it all day. That's the first obstacle, is just not having time because we're too caught up in activities. And so the antidote to that is understanding impermanence. And that's where we are. And so we've reviewed the topic pretty thoroughly with Rinko Tulku, but since we are taking an extra week to fit in some extra materials, we're going to first look at Ornament of Precious Liberation. And if you have Jewel Ornament of Liberation, whatever book you have, we're going to use this one today. And we're not going to read it because that would be very time consuming, but we're just going to hit the high points of it, mostly because it just has a lovely structure. I happen to really like a good outline, like a really, you know, organized kind of infrastructure, and this chapter is very satisfying on that count. So so the things that I wanted to touch on here are, right, so the first, so the structure comes into play on page 49 if this is the book you're using, and you're on your own if you're using Jewel Ornament, but it's where he talks about there are two categories of impermanence. So this is like the Roman numeral. outline, the two categories, Roman numeral one is impermanence of the world. And Rinku Tulku talked about that. So we all understand that the whole world can be destroyed and world systems are constantly destroyed and, you know, and being born. So that's number one. Second big category is impermanence of sentient beings. So then we went through this with Rinku Tulku, but we'll just like review the structure here. So within impermanence of the world, there's the gross, you know, impermanence of world systems dying or being destroyed. And then there's the subtle impermanence of like how impermanence manifests in the world around us, in our environment. And so the first example that we're encouraged to notice and contemplate as much as we can is the changing of the seasons. We're kind of stuck in winter right now, but it will be changing. It will be changing, you know, February into March or so. We'll start to see the daffodils and so forth, depending on where you live. It could be later. The other, next one is the cycle of day to night. And then the third one, and they're just getting, you know, more minute as we go through. The third one is moment to moment impermanence. So those are the two major, those are the two categories of impermanence of the world. And so now we go to the second major heading, impermanence of beings, and that starts on page 50. Yeah, the bottom of page 50, the second technique of meditation contemplates the impermanence of the inner essence, sentient beings. And you, then within that, you first contemplate the impermanence of others, and then you contemplate your own impermanence. And it's, so at the top of page 51 in Ken Holmes's translation is like one of my favorite quotations of all time. And it's very short and pithy and might not seem like much, but this comes to mind all the time for me. And Ken's translation here is the three realms, it's at the top of page 51, the three realms are impermanent like autumn clouds. I don't like that translation particularly. I have it as the three worlds are as fleeting as autumn clouds, which I just think sounds nicer. The three worlds are as fleeting as autumn clouds. And yes, Lama Jinzong.
What does that mean? I don't know what autumn, what is autumn? Why autumn clouds?
That's a Tibetan thing. I think we can just think clouds.
Okay.
I think, I don't know, it's like, why do they say like rivers in summer? You know, here rivers dry up in summer. It's rivers in spring that are gushing. So I think it, you know, I don't know why autumn clouds. I do think of it in autumn. Yes, Dave.
No, the rivers, like that would be in lands where there's a lot of snowfall. The rivers
get flooded
when it's melting.
Yeah. So the autumn clouds, we still don't know. They also say, as blue as the autumn sky. And I don't know that the sky is bluer in autumn to me than it is in other seasons. But anyway, so let's think of it as just poetic. Because, you know, in the autumn, like the winds are starting to come in, the winter winds perhaps are blowing the clouds more. I haven't really done a study. A good question, why is autumn in there? Everybody know what the three realms refers to? Because usually we talk about the six realms, right? The six realms of samsara. So the three realms just includes all beings, even like, it's like what we think of as the six realms is of the three realms, our six realms fall into what's called the desire realm. And then there's the form realms and the formless realms, which are, I think, you know, people who have refined their stream of being through meditation to the point where they don't even need to have a physical form in the formless realms. So it just means all beings, like without any exception, the three worlds are as fleeting as autumn clouds. So that's the basic structure. Impermanence of the world and impermanence of beings, impermanence of the world through all those examples and impermanence of beings. All beings are impermanent. And then within that, we can look at how other beings are impermanent and think that we too are impermanent. And so that brings us to page 52 in Ken Holmes's Ornament of Precious Liberation, which is the ninefold way of meditating on death or contemplating death. And so we're going to approach this a little bit as a contemplation
We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because I want to get to some other things, but maybe about 10 minutes. We're just going to go through each of these topics. And so he says, alternatively, as opposed to, you know, all the sort of contemplations he's given us up to here on death, there on page 51, he says, alternatively, one could engage in the ninefold way of meditating on death. The ninefold technique is centered on three main contemplations. Number one, I will certainly die. Like, I'm not going to be able to escape death. Number two, the time of death is indefinite. I don't know when I'm going to die. And number three, when I die, nothing whatsoever can accompany me. I can't take anything with me. So then there's three reasons. So if you're not sure that you're definitely going to die, like if there's any doubt in your mind, he has three reasons, like to confirm that if you have any doubt, you definitely are going to die. And number one is you can look at history, and nobody's alive now who's like more than 100 years old or so. That means that an awful lot of people have died before us. No one before us, except those born, you know, whose lifespan allows them to still be alive. Now, everybody born before a certain year, they're all gone. They all died. Nothing else happened to them. Number two, the body is a composite phenomenon. And number three, life is consumed from moment to moment. Okay, so we're going to, I think that everybody before us has died is obvious, but if we look at page 53, you see the number two, like about a fourth of the way down the page. It is certain I will die because my body is something composite. Any composite whatsoever is impermanent, and every composite is destructible by its very nature. So remember the four N's, everything. I might have to look it up, but the end of all building is ruin. The end of the end of all accumulation is dispersal or scattering. The end of all meeting is parting, and the end of all birth is death. So all of those things are composites. So anything that's made up of other things is going to die or come to an end. So then further down the page, number three, it is certain I will die because life is consumed from moment to moment. I think we can all relate to that sort of viscerally, but Gompopa is going to explain what he means a little bit. Life gets closer to death with the passing of each instant. We don't dwell on this maybe as Buddhists we do, but we're not encouraged particularly to dwell on this. We're encouraged to look younger, do whatever it takes to look younger and stave off aging. But the fact is that life gets closer to death with the passing of each instant. And he says, and I love this part, if this is not obvious, let us consider examples that bear some similarity. An arrow shot by a strong archer, a torrent cascading over the edge of a steep cliff, and a prisoner being led to the place of execution. Like, nothing's going to stop those processes once they're set in motion. So our life is like that. So then on page 54, or if you're in a different book, it's the three reasons why the time of death is not definite or is not certain. So the first one is the lifespan is uncertain. And we're just going to relate to that however we relate to that. But, you know, he points out that some babies die in the womb. Some babies die when they're born. There's death at birth. There's death of crawlers and toddlers. There's death of teenagers. And you can die in your 20s. You can die in the prime of life. But eventually everybody dies. So lifespan is uncertain. When you're born, you're not guaranteed a particular number of years. So that's the first argument, the first confirmation that the time of death is not definite. The second one, the time of death is indefinite because the body has no single vital essence. This is very similar, I think, to compositeness. We're just made up of a bunch of different things. And then the last reason is the time of death is not definite because there are many potential causes of death. And again, Torch of Certainty has a nice list of those. And also, Torch of Certainty also makes the same observation that Gompopa makes here. There is nothing that could not become a cause of death, either for me or for someone else. So then the final set of contemplations in this ninefold contemplation is that nothing can accompany us when we die. So wealth and objects cannot accompany you, friends and relatives cannot accompany you, and your own body. Even your own body cannot accompany you. So what can accompany you when you die? The only thing that accompanies you is like your karma and your state of mind to some extent. That's, you know, when we did the meditation earlier today. And also the when we read the second reminder, at the time of death, only the Dharma can help me. Like, however we have developed our mind stream, that we will take with us. And that's why we need to prioritize study, contemplation, and meditation. And oh, and also wealth and objects cannot accompany you after death. So all of the artwork that you're attached to, or the kitchen implements, or whatever it is in your life that like is really precious to you, it's not going with you. So it pays to detach yourself earlier rather than later. So let's see if there's anything else. Okay, friends and relatives cannot. Oh, right, I see. This is we already said that one, but this is the explanation, right? So he has an explanation of each of those, that wealth can't go with us, friends can't go with us, and even our own body can't go with us. So the point of all of this is page 57. The second way of contemplating your own impermanence is by observing. So the first way of contemplating is through those contemplations, like really thinking about those signs that we're really going to die. The second way of contemplating your own impermanence is by observing what happens to others and applying it to yourself. And this is something that Lama Norla Rinpoche always talked about and encouraged us to do. When we see someone dying, we don't, you know, yes, we have compassion for them, but it also triggers us to remember that we're going to die too. And it's actually, you know, it's expressed in a very lovely way here in Gampopa. And I'm just going to read those. These are at the end of each paragraph. So he says, about a third of the way down, page 57, applying to yourself the deaths of other people you have witnessed dying is done as follows. This is a really nice one. Think of those closely related to you who were strong at first, of healthy complexion, feeling happy, and never giving a moment's thought to death, yet who were stricken, then stricken by fatal illness, and then what they went through as they got more and more sick. They knew that they were going to die and that nothing could be done to prevent it. Any of us who have known someone who has gone through dying has seen that happen. Surrounded by their remaining friends, they ate their last meal and spoke their last words. So remembering this, evoking these images, remembering, going through that with that person, what you should think is, I too am of the same nature. I will also be subject to this. I too have these characteristics and have not transcended this particular phenomenon. And then the bottom of the next paragraph, contemplating such scenes as a corpse making its one-way journey over the threshold. I guess, you know, if you go to a funeral, you might see the coffin, or maybe you see a hearse going by. You don't see very many hearses these days, but you used to see funeral processions. You know, it was like a big deal if a funeral procession was, I guess they still have them, I don't know, but there'd be the hearse, and then there'd be all these cars, and they'd have their headlights on so that you would know that it was a funeral procession and nobody would cut in front of it, like interrupt it. So you would see funeral processions go by pretty regularly. So when you see something like that, you think, I too am of the same nature, dot, 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 the same contemplation as above. And then if you see, if you go to a cemetery, we don't really have charnel grounds here where bodies are just left on the ground for the vultures to eat. But when we're in a cemetery, we could think, I too will be like this. And then if you hear about somebody else's death, whenever people say such and such a person died, think as above, I too am like that. And then remembering other people who have died, reading someone's obituary, for example, the obituary of a famous person in the New York Times, think, I too am like this. This will happen to me too. This is actually, it sounds kind of simplistic perhaps, but it's very powerful. Like every other Dharma practice we do, it's about repetition. It's about habituation, you know, to thinking a certain way. And so the more we habituate ourselves to the realization that everybody else's death is just a, it's just a foreshadowing of our own death, we'll take it seriously. And what's the point of that? Like, other than just being morbid, what's the point of that? Back to the meditation we did, it inspires us to remember that our time is limited and to remember, like, where do I want to be when I'm on my deathbed? Do I still want to be caught up in 16 projects and 16 dramas with other people? Or do I want to have cultivated, you know, my study, contemplation, and meditation and be really prepared to ease into, as much as it's possible to ease into death, to ease into it with a positive, peaceful mind? So by remembering that whenever we see an example of somebody dying, it will just help to reinforce our priorities. It will help us to keep our priorities where we want them to be. Okay, so we have a few things. I think I'll end with Kala Rinpoche, because that'll be a nice review of the whole thing. He has another, like, he has a, what I'm going to read you from this book, The Writings of Kala Rinpoche, is basically, it's just another capsule summary of the same material. We've done it in Gampopa, we've done it in Ringu Tulku. These are the things we need to think about. But I have a little treat first, which is, so there's a quote on page 58 of the last page, it's almost at the end of the chapter, if you have a different version of the book, that made me remember the old days at the New York City Dharma Center back in the 80s. So the quote is, since no one, it says in the sutras, it says, since no one knows which will come first, tomorrow or the next life, it makes sense to strive for what has meaning in the next life and not put a lot of effort or not put too much effort into what is just for tomorrow. And that brings us back to the priorities. Like, most of the stuff that we spend our lives doing has a very short shelf life. You know, it's not something that's going to help us in our next life. So we ask, well, we have a lot of next life ahead of us and not so much of this life. This life is very limited, but we could go around the cycle again and again and again if we don't take ourselves out of it. What's going to help me with that? So it was the phrase, since no one knows which will come first, tomorrow or the next life, that reminded me of this practice. And this is a very nice, our little, you know, our little translation by Ken McLeod was just this sort of stapled together typed thing, but it was a very nice pecha. I think it was put together by Lynn Pardee, who was a student of Lama Narayana Rinpoche back in the day. And so what I was remembering is back in the 80s, before KTC was really fully functional, we were still building like the basic building blocks of it in the early 80s, and Lama Narayana Rinpoche lived in New York City and went to KTC on the weekends. So a lot of us we worked in New York City and we would go to KTC on the weekend and help with the construction and so forth. So we met on Wednesday nights at Zanlin Kunshab, the New York City center that was founded by Kala Rinpoche in 71, I think. We met on Wednesday nights and we chanted Chenrezig, and Lama Narayana Rinpoche would give a teaching. But we met on Sunday mornings as well, and we chanted this practice, the Bodhisattva Chenrezig. And it has a very lovely four thoughts at the beginning of it. And so what we would do is that I think we would chant together. Lama Narayana Rinpoche would lead us in chanting the Tibetan, and then he would pick a person to read in English, like the English contemplation. And this is the same translation here. This is the Ken McLeod translation. So this is what we would do. So I'm just going to skip to the impermanence contemplation. And this is available. I think you can probably get it at KTC, or you can get it through. It's just a different, it's the Shangpa version of the Chenrezig practice called Bodhisattva Chenrezig. But now I'm going to read the impermanence. Joanne, did you have a question? Hold on, I don't have you unmuted.
Who would be the source of our request for that?
I don't really know. Lama Jinzang, do you know who one would ask at KTC? Your probably best bet is to go to Namze Bangze bookstore, the KTD bookstore. They publish this. This is published by them.
All right, that's good.
Bodhisattva Chenrezig.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so now without further ado, I'm going to read this. But it just puts me right back in like the little shrine room at Zamlin Kun Shop on 19th Street back in the old days. The universe, this external world, is destroyed by fire and water. The four seasons are mere moments that come and go. Notice this is following Gampopa's structure. Everything is impermanent, bound in the four ends. Remember the four ends. There never is a person born who doesn't die. Life and breath are like lightning and dew. That goes back to the verse we're going to do in a couple of minutes, meaning that they're very fleeting. Lightning and dew are both very things that don't last more than a moment. Life and breath are like lightning and dew. It is not even certain which will come first, tomorrow or the next world. That line has just always stuck with me. It is not even certain which will come first, tomorrow or the next world. If I just think about Dharma but don't practice it, the demons of distraction and laziness will carry me away. Since I must go empty-handed and naked, I should practice the Supreme Dharma without delay. Just another presentation of the same material. So let me see if I have anything else on the list before we get to Kala Rinpoche. All right, so yeah, we'll do Kala Rinpoche next. Anybody have any questions or comments on impermanence? All right, I'm gonna actually just read the last paragraph of Arnhem of Precious Liberation first, because he sums it up and he talks about like, what is the benefit? What is the meaning of this contemplation on impermanence? So he says, the third point discusses the benefits of meditating on impermanence. By understanding that all composite things are impermanent, strong craving for this life will be countered. Further, the seed of trust or faith will be planted. Diligence will be reinforced, and this will be an important factor in realizing sameness, since it quickly frees the mind from attraction and rejection. So it really strongly reinforces our Dharma practice to understand impermanence. So now, Writings of Kala Rinpoche, and this is, book is, I think, hard to get these days. It's Kala Rinpoche's sort of Lam Rim, his Stages of the Path book, his first published book. So he goes through the four contemplations, and here's this, I'm going to skip a little bit of it, but here's basically his contemplation on death and impermanence. Secondly, meaning the second of the contemplations, secondly, when impermanence is contemplated, your neurotic concern with life diminishes, and you are able to cultivate virtue or practice, engage in practice. What is impermanence? The end of any acquisition of wealth or luxury is its dispersion. The end of any construction is ruin. The end of any meeting is separation, and the end of birth is death. Everything is impermanent. Moreover, this universe, which seems solid and firm, is impermanent. It will be destroyed in stages by fire, water, and wind. The four seasons also reveal impermanence. And then he has like a sort of extended description of each season, which doesn't exactly correspond to our seasons, I don't think. So we're going to skip that and just go to the next example. The seasons changes come and go. The rising and setting of the sun and moon also reveal impermanence. Days are bright and clear, and nights are black and dark. Time, too, ever passes. So notice, same structure as Gampopa here. The world is impermanent. Seasons come and go. Day and night come and go. And then moment-to-moment impermanence. Time, too, ever passes. The passing moments grow into minutes and hours. And now, this quote, this is a really profound observation he's giving us here. And actually, Gampopa said it in different words in OPL as well. But this is another one of those quotes like, which will come first tomorrow or the next day, that's always stuck in my mind. So this impermanent world is like a waterfall. A repetition of similar events gives the impression of continuity. So you could write that down. I'll send that out in an email. He's telling us how it actually is. And I think this is a very early translation. It's Ken MacLeod's first published translation. I wouldn't say a repetition of similar events. I think it's like more like a series, because not that the same thing is repeating again. But it's very similar. This impermanent world is like a waterfall. A series of similar events gives the impression of continuity. So why is that like a waterfall? I think because the waterfall is actually made of billions of drops of water, individual drops of water. So like its nature is it's a composite of a lot of drops of water, but as it rushes over, everything is sort of so close together that it looks like just like a stream, it looks like one thing when it's really made up of a billion things. And so he's saying that the world is the same way. It's made up of like billions of, you know, of similar. I think Kimball Slater and Jomso pointed this out, other teachers have pointed out to us Westerners. It's like, what is a movie? When you watch a movie, it is, you know, it looks like a continuous stream of something, but it's really individual frames. It's like many, many, and each frame differs from the previous frame by just a tiny, tiny little bit, so that things seem to change and people seem to move and people talk, but it's really frame by frame by frame by frame. So anyway, I'll read that quote one more time. This impermanent world is like a waterfall. A series of similar events gives the impression of continuity. We could contemplate that one a lot. So to continue, all sentient beings, the inhabitants of the universe, are subject to impermanence. So he's moved now from impermanence of the world to all those examples to now impermanence of sentient beings, just like Gompopa did. All sentient beings, the inhabitants of the universe, the inhabitants of the impermanent universe or world, are also subject to impermanence. All who have come before us have died. So you're going to hear echoes of Gompopa throughout this. All who have come before us have died. All that are living now will die, and all who come after us will die. You yourself draw closer to death each year, each month, each day, hour, and minute. Though you be brave and courageous, you cannot turn death away. Though strong and fleet of foot, you cannot escape through flight. Though clever and eloquent, your erudite discourses can do naught. Brave troops, devastating weapons, power and influence, clever schemes, wealth, beauty will not turn death away. No matter how beautiful you are, you will still die. Sad. When the sun goes behind the mountain, no one can possibly delay or detain it. Nor is it certain how long you will live. Death can come to you in your mother's womb, at birth, when you can just crawl or walk, in your youth or in your old age. The hour of your death is not certain. As to the manner of your death, you could die by fire, flood, lightning, or exposure, in earthquakes, avalanches, falling buildings, or from weapons, poisons, demons, bad food, and so forth. Which of these will be the cause is not known. Your life is like the flame of a butter lamp in a hurricane. That's an image we could contemplate too. Like the flame of a butter lamp in a hurricane, a bubble on water, or a drop of dew on a blade of grass. You don't approach death willingly or gladly. Rather, you approach it quite unwillingly. You leave behind your land, house, and farm, your property and possessions, your relatives and close friends, your mother, father, children, brothers, sisters, and spouse, and even your own body. Powerless, alone, and friendless, you have to go to an unfamiliar realm, the terrifying stage between death and birth. Whether this departure comes sooner or later, it is inevitable. Therefore, whenever you see, hear, or think of someone else's death, you should make it a part of yourself. No one thinks about death when he is robust, well, and feels happy and comfortable. Yet when the afflictions associated with death strike, your body's strength ebbs, and you cannot sit, even in a crouch. The glow of health wanes, and you look like a corpse. You are in pain and are unable to alleviate it. Medicine, rituals, and ceremonies provide no relief, and you understand that you are to die. Your suffering and fear increase, and you despair of leaving everything behind and having to go alone. When you think of someone else eating his last meal and saying his last words, remember that you too will not avoid this situation. Once someone has died, even a person who loved him very much does not want to keep his corpse for more than a day or two. Everyone is sickened and looks on with apprehension. The undertakers carry him out of the house and away to be buried in a cemetery, cremated, stuffed in a crevice, or left for vultures and wild dogs. After his corpse is disposed of, no eyes will ever see him again. You should think about the fact that you too will come to the same end. When you die, the three precious jewels and your lama are the companions who can provide refuge. Since virtue and evil are the only factors which help or harm, now is the time to practice the Dharma properly. This physical existence is compounded of various parts: black and white karma, excretions from your mother and father, the four elemental natures, or we'd call them the four elements, space and consciousness, and so forth. All compounded things are impermanent, and so is this physical existence. So I think that paragraph speaks to that thing that Ngampopa was expressed as, you know, the we're not made of one vital essence, which is a little cryptic in Ngampopa, but here it's like, well, we got the karma, we got the, you know, the excretions from the mother and father, we have the four elements, and so forth. And that makes us compounded, and compounded things always fall apart. People of high station lose their status. People of low status rise. The rich become poor, the poor become rich. Enemies become friends, and friends become enemies. Since everything fails to transcend its impermanent nature, to regard what is impermanent as permanent is to be bewildered. People who do this are generally considered insane. Now that you have obtained this precious human existence, you can convey and comprehend ideas, have a full complement of capabilities, have met spiritual teachers and friends, and have understood the implications of the Dharma. Should you waste it now, you may never again obtain a similar physical existence, no matter how long you experience the intense pain of samsaric existence. That's back to, you know, Ngampopa saying it will never end on its own. Since the time you have to live is as brief as flashes of sunlight through clouds, vow to practice the Dharma thoroughly and do so diligently. This sort of contemplation of impermanence leads to an appreciation of the impermanence of all composite things. This appreciation decreases basic attachment, destroys the power of emotionality, meaning, you know, the emotional poisons, desire, anger, jealousy, pride, and so forth. Just by appreciating impermanence, it chips away at the emotions and increases your faith in the Dharma and makes diligence your companion. As you practice the Dharma, you will never be depressed or weary. I hope that that is true for all of us. And you will finally realize the meaning of the unborn, undying nature of mind and obtain the perfect attainments of Mahamudra. So anyway, so that's Kalarimpache's explanation of impermanence. So I'm just looking something up. Yeah, okay. I was thinking I might have time to read the little story at the end, but I don't think so. Yeah, the story at the end is about the prince who ends up sort of being somehow transported into a completely different life. And he has a whole life there, and he gets married, and he has children, and then he snaps out of it. And then having lived this entire lifetime, he comes back to where he started, back to his old life, and it's like nothing had happened. So I was telling you that there was a Star Trek episode, Star Trek The Next Generation, in which Captain Picard experiences that same thing. But I also remembered that Dzongsar Chense Rinpoche's second movie called Travelers and Magicians is exactly that story. So if you've seen that movie, it's the same story. Same thing happens. If you have a chance to see that movie, Travelers and Magicians, I highly recommend it. Same thing. And if you happen to have the writings of Kalarimpache, you can read the story. But, you know, that was the spoiler, is that he lived a whole lifetime within a moment of his his life, which is just to show what an illusion it is. What he thought, he experienced it as an entire lifetime, and it was really like a moment somehow. Anyway, so the last thing on our agenda is another screen share, and it's on the, this is the verse, this is the verse on impermanence from the Diamond Cutter Sutra. It's on your reminder for arousing bodhicitta sheet if you have that, but I also have it on a screen share. And this is one of three verses that are chanted during the Dom Sum practice that's chanted every other day at KTC. Sort of, it's all the whole Dharma in a nutshell is these three verses. We could, in fact, we have time, we could chant all three verses, but we're really focusing on the first one. The Buddha considered it so important that he says in the Diamond Cutter Sutra that to just learn this verse, to chant this verse, or recite this verse, to memorize this verse, or to teach this verse to another being is more meritorious than offering any amount of wealth to the Buddha, you know, to the three jewels. This verse is even more meritorious than any offering you could possibly make. So we will chant it together. The tune is similar to the one that's used in Dom Sum. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar. So these are all examples of impermanence and how we should think of every single experience that we have. And that's the story at the end of Kala Rinpoche's writings, or the Star Trek episode, or Dzongtsar Chense's Travelers and Magicians. Like, the whole lifetime fit into any one of these examples. So the Buddha's description of impermanence. Flickering stars and candle flames, illusions, water bubbles, dreams, dewdrops, clouds, a lightning flash, view all composite things like this. So I'll chant this two more times. Flickering stars and candle flames, illusions, water bubbles, dreams, dewdrops, clouds, a lightning flash, view all composite things like this. So we could view our entire lifetime as being as fleeting as any one of these things. And the clouds are in there. Remember, the three worlds are as fleeting as autumn clouds. Well, that's like the middle of the third line. Clouds is one of the examples. Our lifetime is as fleeting as the flickering of a star, as the flame of a candle, as an illusion, as a water bubble, as a dream, as a drop of dew in the sun, as a cloud, as a lightning flash. That is how we should think of our life and all of our experience. So one more time to chant it. Flickering stars and candle flames, illusions, water bubbles, dreams, dewdrops, clouds, a lightning flash, view all composite things like this. So we'll chant the other two verses just to have them. The second one is what's called the Om Ye Dharma mantra. We chant that in various things at the monastery. It's basically the four thoughts. The four noble truths. The first noble truth, right, is that everything contains suffering. All of our samsaric experience contains suffering. The second one is that it's not random. It's caused by something. It has a cause. All suffering has a cause. So that's all that happens has a cause. And then the third one is that whatever has a cause has a cessation. It can be brought to an end. So those are the two noble truths that are embodied here. And I guess the suffering is really the first verse. Like, impermanence is sort of the root of suffering in a way. So this is like the noble truths, that all of our suffering has a cause, and therefore it has a cessation. And then the fourth noble truth is the truth of the path, like how you bring about the end of suffering. And that is, the path is summarized in the last verse. So let's start from the top. Let's do flickering stars one more time because we have time. Flickering stars and candle flames, illusions, water bubbles, dreams, dewdrops, clouds, a lightning flash, view all composite things like this. All that happens has a cause,
as spoken by the one gone thus, nor any cause without a stop. These are the words the great monk taught. Refrain from actions that cause harm. Engage in virtue all you can. Tame your own mind utterly. This is the Buddha's great teaching.
So that's it. That's all I got. We got 5 minutes left. Anybody got anything they would like to say or ask? Okay, Angela, and then Dave, and then Joanne. Angela, you're on.
I ask a very unrelated question. Sure. I'm involved in children's programs. Are there any good children's books to help teach the children the Dharma?
You need to be in touch with Lama Depa at the monastery. I can email her. You want me to send her your email address?
Wonderful. Yeah.
She's done, I don't know if she still does it, but she's done a children's program at the monastery for many years now. She has a lot, and she's also the librarian, so she has a lot of resources. Okay.
Thank you.
Deba for Angela. Ray, children's resource. I'm making myself a note because I might forget. Okay, great. Good question. And then I think Dave was next, and then Joanne. So Dave, you're on.
Two things. One, the waterfall example or rain, I think is also not only just general impermanence, but it's also used as an example to explain time, like the moment to moment, like when you're meditating or whatever, you know, you get the don't think about the past, don't think about the future. I say like the there's no future, there's no past, there's only this moment. But then you break down the moment, it doesn't exist either, because it's a composite past, which is very confusing for us because we're, you know, making it something solid so that we can understand it. Yeah. But like a waterfall or rain gives you that feeling like if I look at it right now, everything is not is somewhere else. All the drops are actually not there. They're because they're moving, and we're looking at them, imposing them not moving. It's like a good thing to keep going back and forth with your head. And rain is an easier example because you may not always see a waterfall, but you will see rain.
Yeah.
And then the other one is a corpse. The difference between a corpse and a person. Like if you've ever seen a corpse of anyone that you knew, just holding that difference in your head is just a great impermanence thing.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay. Okay, Joanne.
All right. Travelers and Magicians, is that a film that you purchase or rent?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it could be streamed somewhere, or you could. I would look on Amazon or wherever you look. And yeah, just put it in and see what the availability is.
Okay.
Or you could Google it and maybe get some information that way.
Travelers
and Magicians, and you know, Dzongso Chenzi is a teacher in our lineage. He's also a Tulku, a recognized reincarnated Dharma teacher, but he made movies. I don't know if he still makes movies, but he made The Cup, which was a movie about soccer, like kids in a monastery wanting to watch the world soccer finals or something, and all the things they did to get access to it. It was very funny. All right, anybody else before we do our prayers? Okay, then we'll do our dedication. And again, I know I've said this before, Lama Nyingma Rinpoche said that of all the advice he got from his first root Lama, the most helpful advice was remember impermanence. It's kind of it's the panacea on one level. If you remember impermanence, it just cuts through, you know, all the solidity we give to things, we, you know, mistakenly attribute to things, and it reprioritizes us. Like in an instant to remember that our time is limited. All right, so now we will dedicate any benefit from this to the enlightenment of all beings, including ourselves. This merit may it win omniscience,
defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. So before we get off, I'm going to try unmuting everybody. Before we get off, I wanted to say that next week, Lama Jinzong will teach the next chapter, chapter 5, The Suffering of Samsara. But that's definitely going to be a two-week enterprise, right, Lama Jinzong?
Yes.
And February 7th, Lama Jinzong will not be available to us because it will be a very busy time at KTC, with Losar having just, the new year just having happened, and then Sita Rinpoche's birthday celebration starting right after that. So since Lama Jinzong won't be able to be with us and it's her week to teach, we have two options. We can either not have class that week, or we can have a free-for-all class, you know, just discussion and questions and answers about any of what we've already studied or any other topics, but we wouldn't be continuing Suffering of Samsara chapter on February 7th. So we have one class in between. Next week, Lama Jinzong teaches, and then the next week is either no class or the free-for-all. And so anybody have a preference about that, or do you want to email me?
Yeah, email.
Okay. Yeah, just let me know by email if you'd rather have the week off, because as we know, we are all very busy, very caught up in we have many worldly things to take care of. And so next week will be our chance to take care of them. Or we could use the time to meditate together and have Dharma discussion. And I'm not saying which one is better. Either one is good. Either one is good. But I do hope that if you take next week off, you will use your time wisely.
I just want to ask, I found it this week in all my papers, that sheet you just had up there with that, the three verses and stuff.
Yeah.
And now I'm going through all of my papers and I can't find it. Could you possibly email that again?
I'll just send it out to everybody again in case you don't have it. And if you have it, just ignore the attachment. Reminder for arousing bodhicitta.
Because I had it and I found it and I was like, oh, that's where it is. And yet now it's no longer where I can find it. Thank you very much.
If anybody else needs any of the other things we tend to use and doesn't have them, just email me, let me know, and I'll send it to you.
And one other thing, just because unfortunately I had to miss the first half hour, I guess you led a meditation. So did Mark or did someone record that? Or it's going to be up there at some point?
Yes, John and Mark between them. John does the recording. He does all the heavy lifting. And then Mark gets it onto the website. And between them, they usually have it up in a day or two.
Yeah. So that's the KDs, that's the...
OPL. I'll send the link. I mean, it's on the website.
The Washington, isn't it? Isn't it the Washington crew?
Right.
Yeah. That's who does the recording and posting. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Because you had sent the link to that once, and I know there's like a content page with the three classes, the links, the Gampopa. So that's where I would go to.
I don't think the Gampopa is actually included in that. I'm not sure. Maybe it is.
It is.
Okay. It is. Okay. So the 37 practices, the Washington DC center teachings, and the jewel ornament teachings, the ornament of precious liberation teachings. But also if you go to the website where I put the class notes.
You have links in there.
There's a link.
Oh, they're
links. Always a link there. Yeah, in the blog roll on the right hand side.
Oh, on your three ways of knowing. Okay.
Yeah, and there's also at the top about the Gampopa study.
And I just chat, I just put it in the window.
But I don't know how to get it from the window. I saw it show. Oh, I see it. And now I just have to
click on it.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I know, but I want to save it is the concept.
Okay.
But well, I have that. Yeah.
And you just go to the website, Three Ways of Knowing,
and it's there.
It's always there. It's always there. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's usually up pretty soon. You know, as soon as John has time to do whatever magic he has to do to make it really nice, and then Mark gets it up. All right. Anybody else have anything before we close? All right. Well, it was great to see everybody, and we'll decide next week whether we're meeting on February 7th or not.
Okay.
So give me your feedback. Okay, great to see you all, and I will exercise the superpower.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Nice to see you, Dan. Great to see you, Dan. Say hi to Clementine.
Oh, there he is.